This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Well, if you ever plan to motor... 100 years ago this fall, Route 66, also known as the Mother Road, was commissioned as the U.S.'s first federal highway system. It spanned 2,400 miles across 8 states, connecting hundreds of rural communities from the Midwest to the West Coast. And along its path sprung a multitude of businesses, gas stations, curio shops, eateries, bars, and motels. The adventure offered by Route 66 also inspired odes like this one by St. Louis's own Chuck Berry. A new exhibition on display in Columbia now through November celebrates the centennial of the Mother Road and includes an exhibit that's traveling across the state with stops in Eureka and St. Clair in coming months. Katie Seal is the State Historical Society of Missouri coordinator of Rolla and Springfield Research Centers and the co-chair of the Route 66 exhibit, and she joins us now. Katie, welcome back to the program.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
So Katie, let's start with some basic need-to-knows about Route 66. For instance, why was it built and how long did it take to complete?
Yeah, so Route 66 is one of many highways that were actually constructed across the United States. And this followed many, many years, decades even, of efforts by road promoters from not just Missouri and not just, you know, the states that Route 66 goes through, but across the entire nation. So you have something called the Good Roads Movement, which comes about kind of at the turn of the century, and especially in more western states where you don't have improved or paved roads really to any extent. It was really a push for not just connection, but to aid with commerce and trade and travel. The slogan that kind of comes out of Missouri in about 1915 is "Lift Missouri out of the mud," because quite literally, a lot of the roads across, even the main thoroughfares of what we think now connecting cities, were mud, were essentially dirt roads. And as our weather this past week shows, we get a lot of rain and inclement weather here. And if that happens, a lot of these roads would simply become impassable, not just to the wagons, but to the automobile that was really starting to rise in prominence all across the United States. So a lot of local efforts, a lot of local individuals here in Missouri and across other states really pushed for not just local city, county efforts, but larger state and federal efforts as well. So that really culminates in 1926, where you have the establishment of the U.S. numbered highway system. And then Route 66, or U.S. Highway 66, was at that time born alongside several other numbered highway systems as well. So construction starts on that immediately in 1926. A lot of the roads and pathways that the original route took were already built. There were some areas in St. Louis, for instance, where they were constructing other bridges, so they had to divert. So it went temporarily on a few different roads as they built connections across the river from Illinois. And then efforts were really put into improving and actually paving the highway through the state of Missouri. And that was completed in 1931.
Mm-hmm. In what ways does the exhibit, Katie, cover those and other major points of Route 66's history?
Yeah, so our main exhibit, the Through the Windshield, Missouri's Route 66, which is on display in Columbia, we really wanted that to be a true representation of all of Route 66 across the state of Missouri. So it's actually laid out by county. So you have some unique, interesting stories from each county, from different locations, but we also kind of wanted to look at the larger picture of what was unique about Missouri itself. Route 66 goes across 8 states, and they each kind of have their own unique history as far as the highway, while also being interconnected. And we wanted to try and show that in this exhibit. So we talk about some of the unique rock architecture or the Googie architecture that you see that crops up, in particular in St. Louis, but also sprinkles throughout the road in Missouri as well. We talk about some of the major players from Missouri that actually helped not only get the road established, but also helped with its promotion and marketing. So people like John Woodruff and John Millang and B.H. Pipemeyer. So sharing some of that story was really key. And then we kind of end the exhibit. We have a separate panel in there that talks a little bit about the decommissioning of the road, but then the very early efforts and the continuing efforts of Missourians to preserve and restore some of the iconic Route 66 history of the state.
Mm-hmm. Katie, earlier you had mentioned stories, and you were on the show with us back in August of 2024 to discuss the collection of items that was underway, mm-hmm. as well as anecdotes. And we also invited our listeners to share some of their stories. We heard from Reddit user OutsideLoose1739, who says, "I saw Kermit Ruffins perform Get Your Kicks at a bar on Route 66. And then he got super high during the intermission and couldn't finish the show, LOL. We also heard from Andre, who says, "The 72-ounce steak challenge at the Big Texan is something that he remembers, the Big Texan Steak Ranch in Amarillo, Texas." We also would like to hear from you. It's been 100 years since the commissioning of the iconic Route 66. What's your most vivid memory or experience along the route? Email us at talk@stlpr.org or give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. Now, I understand that you have traveled quite a bit of Route 66 yourself, Katie.
Yeah, so a little bit unknowingly, I would say, as a child, from kind of the Springfield Southwest area up to and through St. Louis many times. I've been up to Chicago about 10 years ago. My sisters moved out to Arizona, so I have been on that road all the way from here in mid-Missouri all the way out to about Holbrook in Arizona several times. I'm also part of a group called Research Route 66, and we meet annually somewhere along the road. So that's taken me to Albuquerque, to Claremore in California. We've been here in Springfield. We've gone to Illinois. This year, we're actually going to be meeting up in Amarillo, Texas. So I've seen a lot of the road.
Mm-hmm. Did you see many tourists as you traveled along the route?
Yes, I did. Depending on some of the locations that I would get to stop at, you see, it's always fun to, I think, note the license plates of where everyone's traveling from. And you see, and hear all the different languages that are coming across. You get some of those at some of the bigger stops, like I think the Petrified Forest. I've been there a few different times, mm-hmm. and you almost expect to see the, people from across the nation and maybe even international travelers at a national park. But even some of the really small, off the beaten trail, smaller Route 66 sites that you get to see them at as well, is really interesting and kind of fun to note that this is truly not just a local or even national phenomenon. It's something that draws people from all around the world.
Mm-hmm. And has that always been the case, since the time Route 66 was built, that it had that draw of so many people from so many different places?
I think for different reasons, yes, to an extent. So in the very early years, the U.S. Route 66 Association actually very consciously set out to market Route 66 as not just a highway to travel, but the highway to travel. And they did that in very early years. first time in 1928, and they held a transcontinental foot race that went along Route 66 from Santa Monica all the way to Chicago, and then it continued on to New York. And it was an international phenomenon. They had runners from all across the U.S., but then also from all around the world, some of them professional athletes in their home countries. So it's something that was covered in newspapers for about 3 months actively. And then, you know, they had promotions leading up to it, and then kind of off spins of the what they called the Bunyan Derby as well. So it became kind of this well-known entity very early on, which then just it kept going. You played earlier Chuck Berry's cover of the Get Your Kicks of the Bobby Troop song, and then later you have the Grapes of Wrath, which just becomes this literary icon, and the Route 66 television series, some of which was filmed there in St. Louis as well. And it just kind of lives in the memory for different reasons. You know, Grapes of Wrath really talks to the Depression era and how people were utilizing the road to make their way out to California or make it to larger cities like Springfield, Joplin, or St. Louis seeking employment. So I think for a variety of different reasons, it's always been kind of a major hub or thoroughfare for the nation, but then also for people immigrating here or traveling or coming here for tourism.
Mm-hmm. We have Mike, who's calling from Fenton with a memory to share. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. In 1968, I was 10 years old, and my mother's sister and her husband, my aunt and uncle, lived in California, but they were visiting, and they had no children, so they decided to take myself at 10 and my brother, 9 years old, back to California, and we drove about 5 days on Route 66. And what memories! Carthage, Missouri the first day, Vega, Texas the second day, and then into New Mexico. I remember learning to pronounce Tucumcari. And then the Petrified Forest in Arizona. There was also like this lava field at some place where we were able to pick up lava rocks. And it was from like the 1st of July through the 5th of July. But then, of course, we went to the Grand Canyon and then, into California. And you still got quite a ways to go to get to the Los Angeles area. But and through San Bernardino, just like the song says, it kind of every time I hear that song, it reminds me of that trip. And just it was fantastic experience for a 10-year-old from South St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Mike. That's lovely. We also have something very memorable and historic in a motel that is located along Route 66, and one in particular was run by Alberta Ellis. Now, Alberta's hotel was a Green Book destination in Springfield, Missouri. The establishment catered to African Americans during the Jim Crow era. And Katie, among the oral histories you've collected about Route 66 is a conversation with the grandchildren of Alberta mm-hmm. Ellis, Irv Logan, and Elizabeth Logan Calvin. Here's Elizabeth remembering her grandmother.
And Alberta, if you see pictures of her when she was young, I mean, just gorgeous, you know, like the way they dressed. I mean, they always looked like they just were coming from church. They were always dressed all the time. And I think that they were smart. When I say the women in the family were feisty and strong, if she thought that something was right and that she had a right, she would pursue it.
And Elizabeth and Irv also recalled how their grandmother, Alberta Ellis, enlisted the whole family to run the Springfield Hotel.
So she moved everybody to the hotel. Aunt Margie did like the cleaning, she did the laundry. Rich did the restaurant. He did all the cooking, the serving, you know, whoever came. And then there was a black barbershop. And then Sis Pike had the beauty shop.
Yeah.
There was a rumpus room. The rumpus room was a place where a lot of Yeah, young people would come. Alberta was pretty strict, though. She tried to monitor the parking lot. She wanted to make sure nobody was in the cars, you know, doing whatever. She monitored drinking. She had a card that you had to be a good citizen in order to get a card to be able to come easily into the rumpus room. You know, she was just no nonsense, you know. Alberta, because when you think about it, she was pretty young when she bought the hotel and when she started. And that, and I mean,
she
that
was what, in her 50s when she passed?
Yeah, but she had the hotel for like a dozen years.
Yeah.
So, and before that, she had the Snack Shack.
Yeah.
Yep. And she bought the farm and the jazz club, what, after the hotel?
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. she had a jazz club out on 66.
Yeah, on 66.
She had a, and I remember that, but, you know, Irv worked in the club cleaning up. But, you know, she brought in jazz musicians from all over the country to perform at, you know, she was Chitlin always
circuit,
doing,
you know.
She was always doing business. She was always like, she was just busy all the time.
You know, Katie, I understand that St. Louis Black musicians and performers stayed at Alberta's hotel. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, Alberta's was one of the very few places where Black travelers, entertainers could stay. There were a few like private homes that maybe had a room to let or something, but Springfield at this time was really booming and growing, and they were bringing in large acts and musicians from all across the nation, really. The Harlem Globetrotters actually stayed at Alberta's one time when they were in town for a performance. They regularly brought in musicians out of St. Louis, and this was the only place that, one, that they could go to stay. They mentioned in that interview the Rumpus Room, which was just a place where people could hang out. They had dances, they had music. It was just a little bit of nightlife. She had the later the jazz club, as they mentioned. There was a nearby Graham's Barbecue, a place where they could actually go in and sit to eat, because very few restaurants, again, segregated town at that time. There was a few places where they could go and pick up food, but actually go to a sit-down restaurant were few and far between in that section of the state. So Alberta was an incredibly smart businesswoman who saw that lack and decided to fill that void in a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm. What did it mean to have this hotel, you know, barbershop and hair salon and the jazz club along the route? I mean, were there many Green Book hotels and rest areas along, you know, other parts of Route 66?
So not for that part of the state. There were quite a few businesses through St. Louis. There were a few private home kind of stops that they had in places like Lebanon. There was a few families there that let out rooms where travelers could stay. But we talked to other people from the Springfield area that can remember making the trip up to visit family in St. Louis, and they would pack a picnic basket. They would bring, you know, cans of gas, and they would even bring their own toilet paper to the extent that there were not places they could necessarily even stop, even just to use a restroom to fill up for gas. And so the fact that Alberta's was not only there in Springfield, but on this major highway that went through the city was huge for Black travelers at that time. It was not just kind of an oasis at that time, but a real respite and a really just a nice place to stop where you could get some services. You could have a nice place to stay for the night. You could have entertainment. And it wasn't just travelers coming through. The Rumpus Room was also open to locals. So it was just another local hangout as well.
So with this exhibition now, and there is the permanent one that is in Columbia, and then the traveling component of it, what is it that people can expect to experience with that?
Yeah, so we also have a travel exhibit. It didn't make sense to not have something that traveled Route 66 for this. So our exhibit is called Missouri's Main Street, 100 Years on Route 66. And we honestly had so much information, amazing stories that we wanted to tell, that a lot of what's on the travel exhibit is actually new and different materials than what we have on the main exhibit. So there's a little bit of duplication. So we talk about like Alberta on both of them, but there's a lot of just new different information. And we have those laid out more by subject. So we have some of the unique architecture, some of the scenic stops, some of the legends of the road, and some of the, you know, realities of travel, that it wasn't all nostalgia and tourism and vacation necessarily for some people, you know, for Black travelers facing racism and segregation, or those traveling during the Great Depression that are, you know, seeking actual housing, economic opportunities to try and sustain their families. So we really wanted to tell the full entire story of the road in these panel exhibits. So they are going to be traveling. We had kind of a soft launch at our Missouri Conference on History, but as of April, they will be officially out and on the road. Mm-hmm. We had so much demand.
Yeah, I know. This is all we have time for, but we'll make this the local stop and a destination for us. Katie Seal is a coordinator of the Rolla and Springfield Research Centers of the State Historical Society of Missouri and co-chair of the Through the Windshield Missouri's Route 66 exhibition. In addition to a stop at Route 66 State Park in Eureka in April, the exhibit will be at the Scenic River Library in St. Clair in September. For more information, visit the Historical Society's website, shsmo.org. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.